Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 15th of October, recording at 9:45 p.m. British Summer Time. Well, being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. So here goes. First and foremost, the most important background factor for global stock markets, or certainly developed country global stock markets, is that Wall Street is in a secular bear trend, defined here as a generation-long contraction in PE ratios, because investors become disillusioned. They no longer expect a repeat of the 1990s, and therefore they're willing to pay less for shares. And of course, we also get a generation of gradually rising yields. Whether that secular bear market resembles Wall Street as we saw back from the, say, late 1960s into 1982, largely a trading range with a ceiling at 1,025 on the Dow, with a number of bungee jumps, notably in 1973 and 1974, or does it resemble something considerably worse, somewhere between what we saw in Japan from 1990 through to 2003, or Wall Street going back even earlier, going back to, say, the 1920s? Or I think almost, well, quite obviously, we're not getting a replay of that, and the reason why I think we have quite a good chance that we could see something more like the late 60s and 70s is that we see all the money printing that's actually taking place. However, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the bungee jumps on the downside are bigger. Now, the other crucial factor in here is that we are in a secular bull market in the supply, what I describe as the supply inelasticity trades or markets, and those are first and foremost industrial and precious metals, or and industrial commodities generally. We certainly have to add oil and natural gas to that list. Now, that means that countries that supply those raw materials, and to a degree that they are a major part of their foreign trade in terms of exports, will do far better than the developed stock markets overall in Europe and in North America. Now, another factor is that it won't have escaped you that the Asian region is growing once again, and it's growing considerably faster than what we're seeing in North America, not to mention Europe. And that trend, I certainly believe, is going to continue. Now, it won't be exponential, it won't be linear, it'll be in waves, and when we get the global recessions, it may well hit those regions quite hard, and we will get global recessions, we always have. And it will hit the stock markets even higher, because they tend to be high beta. But my point in all this is that over the next 10 to 20 years, when we see the bearish phases on Wall Street, and that will drag down or certainly be a powerful leash in terms of upside potential for even the most interesting of the supply and elasticity or emerging markets. When we get those bearish phases, we will see the sharp contractions in some of the thinner developing country markets. But in all probability, their troughs will be higher than the trough during the previous down wave. That may not be the case, probably won't be the case for Wall Street over the next few years, or probably won't be the case for the European stock markets over the next few years. In other words, I expect those lows that we saw in October 2002 to be taken out before this secular bear market ends. I'm talking about the lows for Wall Street and the European markets. My feeling is that all the emerging markets will remain above those lows. Now, moving around in these emerging markets, a lot depends on governance, as I've mentioned before, and that's something that needs to be monitored constantly. What about the rest of Asia? Well, I'm less interested in developed Asia, with the exception of Japan. Japan was out of sync, still in its long bear market, while secular bull markets existed in most other stock markets. And therefore, I think Japan is likely to be, among major developed markets, is likely to be the best performer over the long term, but it's slow burn. Okay, but meaning that, when I say slow burn, meaning that we're still in a base extension phase. It's going to be a very, very long-term gradual recovery. It'll probably pick up steam towards the latter years of that recovery, as most secular bull trends do, but that's way, way down the road. Now, what about the nearer term? Just very briefly, these markets are still moving to the dictates of the oil price. And when oil dipped down today, and it got down to, crude oil got down to 54.14, so it was a bit down on the day, and that pushed Wall Street up to its highs, but then oil pushed straight back up to $55 a barrel. That's another new high for this move, and it closed at 54.93, and so that pared back the gains on Wall Street. Now, I've been saying recently that as long as the oil price kept moving up, that the stock market rally from the mid-August reaction lows was history, and it was just a question of how much of those gains would be retraced. And I've said conversely that if we get oil coming down, and we had a shot across the bows in that key day reversal, I think on Wednesday of this week, if we get oil coming down, say going back below $50, and the more $50, the more below $50 that it fell, the more confident I would be about the forecast I'm about to make, then we would see stock markets, I think, pick up again and rally, get one of those more or less typical year-end and election year rallies through through year-end. But that's a big if, because the oil price hasn't peaked yet. Even though I suspect, looking at the chart action, I suspect that we are close to that peak. But, you know, there's an outside chance. A lot of people are starting to talk about $60. That doesn't mean that it's going to happen on this move, obviously. But until we get another downward dynamic, and crucially follow through on the day after that downward dynamic, that's what did not happen with the key that we saw earlier this week. Until we see that, we will not be able to say for sure that oil has commenced at least a short-term and quite possibly a medium-term corrective phase. Now, the other factor will be the polls, the election polls in the U.S. If Bush pushes back ahead in the polls, looks like he's going to win, then that will certainly cushion the downside, regardless of what oil's doing, relative to what would happen if Kerry is in front and looks like winning the election. I've said before, that's not a political comment. It's the devil you know versus the one you don't. And everybody does know that Kerry would be raising somebody's taxes, at least. Over the long term, probably won't make a whole lot of difference. Okay, moving on now to government bonds. I maintain that government bonds are in a top extension phase following the end of the secular bull market in June of 2003. Now, we've seen a heck of a good rally, and they too are in thrall the oil price, and therefore, if oil, well, what's been going on is that as the oil price pushed higher, people were buying the government bonds because they were fearful of what would happen in the stock market, quite rightly so. But they were also saying that because this is such a big tax on consumption and also corporate expenditure, for manufacturing companies at least, that it would act as a very heavy tax, and therefore that would be really quite deflationary, or I should say disinflationary, and therefore they were keen to buy the bonds. Now, again, I think that really the bond situation is, I've described it so many times, as an accident waiting to happen, while saying that this top extension phase could take a very, very long time. But quite simply, we have the fact that governments are issuing more and more bonds, so the government debt is going up and up, not led by Japan and the United States among the major developed countries. Rates are really quite low. Governments are printing huge amounts of money. Well, that's helping to keep the bond prices steady here in the near term, but it's also sowing the seeds of a long-term inflationary cycle, which will be extremely bearish for bonds. So therefore, when I think bonds are looking a bit pricey, I go in and sell them short, and I did so today with the U.S. 30-year treasuries. I moved back in, and they actually closed above where I sold them. They closed at 112.31, 30 seconds, and that's because the price of oil pushed up a bit higher. But I'm going to treat this on a bit of a baby steps basis, though I went in with a reasonable hit here in this today, but I would add to that position. It's by no means a full position overall. I potentially would add in either direction, but certainly the oil price moves higher next week, and having hit a new high today, we obviously can't rule that out. It's a probability more than a possibility that we do see oil edge a bit higher, or even run a bit higher, even though I feel that we are quite close in both price and time to that next short to medium term correction. But higher oil price, then that's likely to push the bonds higher, and I would short a bit further. I'll also have another look at the JGBs next week. Now, moving on to the currency markets, a significant development today. We had the euro show the best evidence for months that it's breaking up out of this range against the US dollar. I'll put it this way, breaking up through that lateral resistance in the 124 region. We had a close up here at 124.74. It did get up as high as 125.08. I put that chart on the website, and that really is a tradable signal, and in general a tradable signal to sell the dollar in here. Now, I don't have big expectations at this time, and I'm going to resist the temptation to trade this because of the overall range bound patterns for the most part, but I have said that long ranges can eventually produce big moves, so if I did anything in here, I would certainly be shorting the dollar, and I do think that's justified on the part of those of you who are active currency traders. If you just want some sort of sensible stop, put it under this week's lows. In other words, if you're buying the euro against the US dollar, or sterling against the dollar, or the Australian dollar, that would be a good one against the US dollar. Put your stop underneath the lows that those currencies saw against the dollar this week. Now, what about the implications? I mentioned my comment that I talk about the implications for a dollar move for other markets. Now, I'm playing this through the metals, and I increased my positions in here today. I bought that lead yesterday, partly in anticipation of this move in the currencies, and I bought that Merrill Lynch World Mining Trust, an old favorite of mine, in here today, partly because of this move, and the implications would be bullish for the supply inelasticity trades, which are priced in US dollars. And I think they've got a pretty good script going for them in their own right, so this would just add to it. And that includes gold. I mean, it was up a bit today. It was up more earlier on, got up to 421.39, backed off a little bit to 418.80, but still up on the day, as was silver, 711. These are in secular bull markets. And I think these bull markets are going to go much, much higher. But people lose patience or they lose heart in something like gold. It's going to take a long time. That comparison that I've used is that gold today is where the S&P 500 index was back in the mid-1980s. In other words, it was a stealth bull market. It was certainly taking place, but most people didn't believe in it or didn't even recognize it. Part of the reason for that is because the price was ranging most of the time. So this is a very long-term play, but the commodity markets are the most interesting area in my view, and the best prospects are, say, the supply and elasticity trades. Those are the industrial commodities. The soft commodities also look extremely interesting in here right now. Some of them are very depressed. I did buy some sugar recently. And or did I buy it today? I can't even remember. Must be getting tired. But all the grains look oversold. I'm just putting up my grains page or look at a few of these. Corn here today closed at 206 3/4. It's rounding around. The soybeans are firming up a bit, although they were down just 1.5 cents in here today. Oats and wheat, they look steady. So the grains are very, very depressed. They're back in the upper recesses of extremely large base formations. And we've had all the good bullish crop news, which is bearish for the prices, I should say. It's bullish in terms of crop yields. Let me get that straight so you absolutely understand it. The crop yields in the United States were spectacular and the best for many, many years, probably over a decade. And therefore, the prices are really, really quite depressed. Well, where do we go from here? Somebody's going to gobble up these commodities, and China will probably be the biggest player in the queue. And if prices were to stay around at these levels, then farmers would plant less, probably despite subsidies. So when we had that famous bell ringing comment, when the report came out to the U.S. Department of Agriculture report on the 12th of October, saying that really it didn't get better than this in terms of crop yields. That caused a bit of a spike on the downside, which many of the commodities retraced that very same day. Soybeans lagged because the soybean yield was even was the best of the in terms of exceeding government expectations, so the worse for the price. But they all look interesting down here, and I have nibbled at corn. I'm probably going to nibble a little bit more, and I've nibbled at the soybeans. I also like coffee, which has come back to quite a cheap level overall. And as far as those energy contracts that I mentioned earlier on, I'm waiting for a pullback, hoping very much for a pullback, and we certainly will get pullbacks. And then I'll be going back into those markets, picking up probably natural gas, but I would certainly also look at the petroleum contracts as well. Okay, folks, that's a long one, so I'm going to wrap it up here and just say have a fantastic weekend.